Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Tonight, our topic is the unkindest cuts, the defunding of California's adult day health centers. The California state budget passed in June held good news for almost no one. But for the more than 35,000 elderly and disabled citizens who rely on the state's adult day health care program, the final word from Sacramento was particularly dire. Praised across the party lines as an effective, innovative, and far less expensive alternative to institutionalized care, the adult day health care program provides frail individuals suffering from a range of chronic conditions with medical and supportive services, usually in the very communities in which they live. But unless a pending lawsuit is successful, Medi-Cal funding for the program will end on December 1st of this year, ostensibly forcing the closure of the state's 300-plus adult-day health centers. Opponents of this plan worry that pulling this safety net might mean that thousands of individuals now served by centers in their communities will end up in nursing homes. But last Friday afternoon, the Brown administration released a draft proposal outlining how it will transition the care of individuals currently using these adult day health centers. And tonight we look at the roots of why this program is being eliminated and the elements of the plan that is being put forth to replace it with our guests here. And as we ask, what will in fact happen to the tens of thousands of Californians who use these services currently? And what does the program's elimination say about the future of community-based healthcare models within the state? And finally, as we transition to care without adult day health centers, how is California prepared to address the needs of its growing aging population? In the studio tonight to join me in this conversation are Michelle Pope. She's executive director of Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay, a nonprofit organization providing a range of programs for individuals with Alzheimer's disease and their families. Welcome, Michelle.
Michael, thank you.
And I'm also joined here in the studio by Elizabeth Zerker. She's staff attorney with Disability Rights California, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing the rights of Californians with disabilities. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we're having some trouble getting Assemblymember Mariko Yamada. She's supposed to be on the program with us tonight. As she represents California's 8th Assembly District and a social worker and longtime advocate for seniors and the disabled, she chairs the Assembly's Aging and Long-Term Care Committee. And I'm not sure if we have her yet. Do we have you, Assemblymaker Yamada? Assemblymaker Yamada, are you on the line?
I am on the line.
Oh, thank I'm so happy. Much. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And for the record, we did invite the Department of Healthcare Services, which is the agency which administers the ADHC or the Adult Day Health Center program, on tonight's program. They're also the ones that are responsible for coming up with this transition plan, and they declined to appear on tonight's show. And as always, we appreciate you listeners joining in on our conversation. So call us with your questions and comments on this topic. We're going to open the phone lines in about 20 minutes, and you can call us at 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can try emailing us now. We're having a little trouble with our email, so you might want to call, but you can try emailing us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So, Assemblywoman Yamada, I wanted to start with you.
Right.
Why did the legislature vote to eliminate this program?
Well, you know, there were many, many difficult budget choices that were presented to us initially, of course, in the governor's budget, which called for the elimination of the adult daycare health benefit. There were many hearings, there were many witnesses that came to testify about what that would do, but we believed we had come to essentially an agreement that we would compromise on, you might call it a half a program, the Keeping Adults Free from Institutions program at $85 million that would have doubled to $170 million with federal drawdown. So the legislature very reluctantly did vote to support a version of the governor's budget, not wholesale elimination, but a half program, if you will. And we, as Democrats, all voted to support the governor in that way.
And then what happened?
Well, unfortunately, and somewhat surprisingly, I might add, many of us who agreed to support the CAFI program were surprised when AB 96, which was the budget trailer bill authored by my colleague Bob Blumenfield from Southern California, was vetoed. I believe it was July 25th.
And what does CAFI stand for?
Keeping Adults Free from Institutions.
Okay.
Many of us, frankly, at this juncture are still stunned by the veto.
And this was the $85 million program that was supposed to be kind of the stopgap measure.
Well, it was to be based on medical acuity. As we all know, adult day health is a model of what I call a hybrid medical social model that has worked for, decades now. At the point in time in our society that I believe we should be strengthening programs like adult day health, we are seeing essentially dismantling of a very important program. But I know that I think you referenced the Department of Health Care director declined to participate. He has the unenviable position of having to implement what the legislature frankly voted for, but the governor vetoed a section that would have allowed, I think, a bit more of a comprehensive program to remain.
So do you feel like you were brought in on a deal and then the rug was pulled out from under you?
Well, having myself, unfortunately, not been at the table during those discussions, I cannot say for certain what the quote-unquote deal was. But as it was presented to us as Assembly Democrats, we were provided the assurance, and certainly with my role as chair of aging and long-term care for the assembly, I do not believe I would have voted to support the CAFI program in the way in which it was characterized. I would have voted no to eliminate the benefit if I had known that the veto was coming.
I see. And why was this program targeted for elimination in the first place? I understand, and we've talked about many times on this program, how social services, the safety net, are the first things to go because they demand so much of the general funds. And so therefore, that's why it always looks like the poor and the disenfranchised are the first to get their services cut, because a lot of other programs are kind of have locked in funding, and this is where there is room to cut. But amongst all of those types of cuts that we've been hearing about, why this particular program? And if you think about, seniors of all people, right? I mean, it's not just seniors, it's seniors and the disabled. Why this program in particular? Was there something about this program that made it more ripe for the picking, so to speak?
Well, since this program really is called the unkindest cuts, I think the operative word here is the word optional. The optional benefit under Medicaid reimbursement, this is the reason that it was able to be picked off. If it was a required benefit or a permanent benefit as part of the Medi-Cal Medicaid reimbursement schemata, it would not have been eliminated.
So what does that mean, that it's an optional benefit?
Well, let's just say that at the federal level, there are certain services that are not negotiable. In other words, there's a federal minimum standard for certain benefits under the Medicaid, Medi-Cal in California program. But the legislature has taken away those benefits that are considered optional. For example, unfortunately, last year, again, because of these unprecedented budget times and because we are unable to secure new revenues, dental services were eliminated to the same population, maybe not the exact same population, but similar population of Medi-Cal beneficiaries. So dental care is just as important as any other, medical care. But because it is considered an optional benefit, it was eliminated in previous budget actions. Adult day health has not been supported, what I would say, strongly over the past several years. It has been on the chopping block, as I call it, in a game of budget chicken for several years. But this time, the wholesale elimination of the benefit was put on the table, and it could be, because it is considered an optional benefit. Any other opportunities to reduce the program in any other way have been challenged in the courts and have been protected by the court.
That's the elimination.
Reduction
in the number of days per week, and then the other piece was the making the eligibility criteria a little bit more stringent.
Absolutely.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. So those have been upheld.
Those have been stayed by the court.
Mm-hmm. I was not going to go there right now, but I'm going to go there anyway. There's some concerns that have been raised about whether this is really about trying to save money or whether this is about trying to go after the perception that there perhaps is some fraudulent activity at adult day health centers, specifically that the institutions that are drawing down Medi-Cal funds for the services that they provide to people are not actually providing the services, and that there's an Office of the Inspector General report that suggests that on up to 40% of service days that the types of services that were promised were not actually delivered, and yet Medi-Cal was still being charged. First of all, what's your response to that issue? And then secondly, how much do you think this is part of the reason why the adult day health centers are being targeted right now?
Well, I think we need to be very careful about establishing a nexus with the elimination in the budget and fraud. I think that there are fraudulent practices in probably every system in our country. You need only look at the home mortgage lending debacle or, other major programs and services that, are available to people in our country. Maybe that wasn't the best comparison because, home mortgages are really a kind of a private lending situation. But I think that where fraud exists, no matter what program it is, it needs to be addressed and rooted out and folks brought to justice. But to say that, it's a tit for tat or quid pro quo because there was fraud in some fraud that may have occurred in the past or even today in this program is not sufficient to justify its elimination. I think that those are two very separate focuses that should be made on any program. And where there is wrongdoing, it should be dealt with. But when you have somewhere between 34,000 to 37,000 nursing home eligible, impoverished, frail, and dependent adults in our state, with more to come, to eliminate the infrastructure for this important health care and social service program, especially at this juncture, I think we are going to find higher costs to the state in the form of increased emergency room, other emergency services, calls to fire and police, potentially abuse situations, and, of course, in the event that some of these recipients do end up institutionalized prematurely, it does cost more to maintain an individual in an institutional setting than it does in a home or community-based setting.
And that's Assemblymember Mariko Yamada. She represents California's 8th Assembly District. She's a social worker and longtime advocate for seniors and the disabled, and she chairs the Assembly's Aging and Long-Term Care Committee. And we'll hear more from you in a little bit, but I want to bring in some of our other guests at this point. So, Michelle Pope, you're Executive Director of Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay, a nonprofit organization. providing a range of services for individuals with Alzheimer's and for their families. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts, having listened to Assemblymember Yamada about kind of how we got here and some of the concerns about what may happen if these cuts, in fact, go into effect on December 1st?
First of all, I want to thank Assemblywoman Yamada for being very aware of, first of all, the fraudulent issue, which seems to have piggybacked itself to adult day health care. We have felt it for the last 3 or 4 years of the conversation. This cut for us means that there are families who are receiving adult day health care that have no other option. These are families who have made the decision to keep their loved one in the community, at home, providing care with adult day health care as a supplement. And while it is an optional benefit, it has become a primary benefit to the families that we serve, not only at Alzheimer's Services, but to the other 38,000 individuals who are receiving adult day health care in this state. I think the families have not been made aware other than through the providers that this is happening. So their lack of awareness is going to hurt them, because the state is saying that there are other ancillary services or other community-based services that they can use instead of adult day health care, and they're already using that, and adult day health care is a part of that continuum of care for them. So I think it's going to be a catastrophe, is what I think, Joseph. I think that a lot of the families are going to either place their loved ones prematurely because they have to work all day. 90% of the people we serve, their caregivers work. So we're supplementing the care that they would be able to provide if they were home during the day. So they're going to have to become unemployed, which is going to put more of a financial burden upon our state. If these people are placed in convalescent or skilled nursing facilities, it's going to cost the state 3 times more to care for those folks and provide the level of care that we currently do. So I just think it's a little short-sighted to throw our seniors and the families in our community under the bus when they need us the most. And also because the numbers of individuals that need this service is not diminishing, it's growing.
And can you spend a moment describing for us what a typical day at an adult day health center is like? What are people actually getting in terms of services? I don't know that a lot of people out there listening mm-hmm. actually know.
Yeah.
I was actually talking with my parents last night about this program, who are elderly themselves, although maybe they don't want me to refer to them as elderly. But
I don't think so.
And they were like, well, what are they going to close senior centers? I mean, and the senior centers have a particular mm-hmm. notion, you know, a place where you go and mm-hmm. you socialize, you get a meal, you maybe play some games. That's not what I understand adult day health centers to be like.
Adult day health care, again, while it has been an optional benefit of Medi-Cal, it should have been a primary benefit because it is a part of a continuum of health care for seniors, for individuals who are disabled, for people with memory loss, whether it be Alzheimer's or other forms of dementia. But an average day, you're being picked up in a van so your loved one can get in their car and shoot off to work while you shoot off to the adult day health care. You arrive there, you have a breakfast. It's a breakfast that is designed by a dietitian. So it's not just a breakfast that's thrown in front of you. It's placed in front of you based on your medical needs. So if you have hypertension, diabetes, any of those other diseases, the meal is prepared around those diseases. Then you have physical therapy by a physical therapist that comes in and makes sure that if you have arthritis, if you walk with a walker, if you walk with a cane, if you're in a wheelchair, that we're trying to get you a little mobile so that you can maintain some independence. Then an occupational therapist will come in to help you with swallowing, will help you with maintaining your ability to feed yourself, button a shirt, tie a shoe. Then you have a staff of individuals that are there that will, yes, have social activities, we dance, we sing, all those things, but they're all done in a therapeutic environment to make sure that this individual not only feels that they're getting medical care, There's a nurse there every day that does pain management, medication management, consults with the physician about this person's care and level of care. And then we provide what we call spa care, but to the general public, it's actually assisting people in the bathroom.
very important that you make that distinction, because I think people would get upset if they thought
they were going into
every
a spa
day.
Treatment.
Right.
But again, you know, again, done with dignity and respect, so the individual has a sense of independence and a sense of just being in an environment where if they have dementia, it's okay. In an environment where if they're not mobile, it's okay. And again, all of us adult day health cares provide of that level of care Monday through Friday for these families in our communities.
And to be clear here, who gets to have this benefit as it's currently funded? Is it open to all seniors, or do you have to meet some eligibility criteria?
There is some eligibility. Medi-Cal has eligibility criteria. The person has to be someone that's skilled nursing eligible. They have to have a certain level of acuities. Again, with Alzheimer's services, all of our folks have dementia and other things going on. And, you know, there are some adult day health cares where people pay privately as well. But for the folks that we're talking about today, these are folks that receive Medi-Cal benefits.
So you're talking about individuals that have problems with their memory or mm-hmm. their ability to navigate day to day the world and have other chronic conditions. And it sounds like they're at the level that if they weren't in a situation like this, what's the next best option for them?
If the family would choose, they are all skilled nursing eligible. The issue with being skilled nursing eligible and having Alzheimer's or some form of dementia is there are not enough beds specifically for people who are on the Medi-Cal, who receive Medi-Cal. So, again, if I want my mom, just say, with adult day health care gone, to go into a skilled nursing facility in Oakland, but she has dementia and all these other things, I may not be able to find a bed in Alameda County, but maybe in Yolo County. Mm-hmm. And we've already know that when you place someone in an institution in a congregate living situation where the family cannot visit, the lifespan of that person is diminished, as well as their socialization. I mean, all the things that we read about in Time magazine and that we're aware of, that people need to be socialized as well as being provided medical care.
So we're talking about a situation that sounds like it was created to help keep people close to home or living in their homes outside of this day program period that would otherwise not be able to.
And at the time of their life where being in their community and being in their home environment is so important, as you've spoken, just even with the CAFI, when we thought that the waiver program was coming through, we were very excited about it, not happy that the elimination went down, but the possibility of keeping people in their neighborhoods was so important to us, along with providing the level of care that we have for the last two decades.
So I want to reintroduce the program in case you're just joining us. This is City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at kalw.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing the defunding of California's adult day health centers with our guests, Assembly Member Mariko Yamada, representing California's 8th Assembly District and chair of the Assembly's Aging and Long-Term Care Committee. And we just heard from Michelle Pope, Executive Director of Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay, a nonprofit organization providing adult day health services to individuals with Alzheimer's and for their families. And we're going to hear from Elizabeth Zerker from the staff of the Disability Rights California organization in just a moment. But for now, we invite you, our listeners, to join in on our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Do you have a family member or someone else that you know who is currently in adult day health? Do you have someone who you're planning on entering into the program? Or do you have a different perspective on what the state should be doing on this issue? 415-841-4134. Or are you perhaps receiving services in adult day health center? 415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So actually, I'm going to stick with you, Michelle, for just a moment more. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the monies issue here, so How much does it cost to have someone attend an Adult Day Health program every day?
Mm-hmm. Well, Medi-Cal reimburses Adult Day Health Care $76, and as of June 1st, with a 10% cut, so it's 68 something. But for our agency,
per day.
For our agency, it costs $110 a day for us to be open. And so we fundraise and have for the last 20 years the difference between what the Medi-Cal reimbursement was at that time or is, and the amount that it costs us to remain open on a daily basis. That's why we're a nonprofit, and that's why that was our mission to provide for people who are underserved and people who need the best of care. So
$68 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have a sense, or perhaps Assembly Member Yamada, you have a sense of what are some of the projected costs if these individuals, if let's just say one individual ends up going to a nursing home as a result?
Well, of course, we do know that the reimbursement rates have been cut, you know, for all programs. Unfortunately, that's another part of the budget situation that we're facing. But certainly a daily rate reimbursement for a nursing home can be up to 2.5 to 3 times as high as it is for an adult day health program. Different centers vary, or different skilled nursing facilities will vary, but the Medi-Cal reimbursement rates are always higher in a 24-hour institutional setting than it would be just in an adult day health program. If I might just add this, in my opinion, adult day health is as important to a frail adult and the working caregiver who takes care of them during other hours as childcare is to a toddler. It's the same kind of care that is needed for a dependent individual, and one that should not, have to face being home alone, unsupervised and uncared for. So I think what we will see is we will see higher costs overall, and that this was a penny-wise and pound-foolish decision that we will regret. We will regret this.
And Elizabeth Zerker, to get you in from Disability Rights California, so it seems clear that it's not just the cost of a day in a nursing home versus a day in Delta Health. There's a lot of the indirect costs that we're concerned about, right? People needing to stay home from work to be able to take care of their family members, more emergency room visits or hospitalizations because people's care is not being sort of monitored as closely. Is that the crux of why your organization has filed a lawsuit to try to stop this?
Well, I would say that the crux of our lawsuit really kind of is focused on the fact that this is a program that is keeping 35,000 people with disabilities and seniors in their own homes and in their communities. And it's part of the state's long-term care system. It's how the state of California has chosen to comply with the Supreme Court's integration mandate in the Olmstead decision, which is a Supreme Court case that says that unnecessary institutionalization of people with disabilities can be a form of discrimination under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So while the state is funding this optional Medi-Cal benefit and under Medicaid law can theoretically eliminate the program, they cannot skirt their obligations under the Americans with Disabilities Act, so that if this program is eliminated and people are forced into institutional settings, that's a violation of federal law. And so the cost comes into it, but on the first issue really is the right of people with disabilities and seniors to live in the most integrated setting that can meet their needs.
And do you think that this is something that the state can, now that CAFI has been vetoed, do you think the state can come through with meeting its obligation, as you put it, in other ways? Or do you feel like the Adult Day Health Centers is really the only way that the state can really live up to this obligation?
It's not the only way that the state can live up to the obligation, but what our position is that they're taking a working program and dismantling it and trying to piecemeal get other services in place with some hope that it would comply with Olmstead, but with no guarantees and no real concrete examples of how it's going to work. Moreover, none of the services and alternatives that are being proposed will be able to replicate the congregate setting, which, in addition to being good for people to be in a congregate setting, is the way that this program has been cost effective. So if you need to send a physical therapist out to 40 people's homes every day, it's going to cost more than two physical therapists who can work with people on a day-to-day basis at a center.
And where does the suit stand currently?
Right now, we have filed a third preliminary injunction. The first two injunctions you mentioned earlier involved the 5 to 3 day reduction and the stricter eligibility criteria. And the second injunction regarding eligibility criteria is on appeal to the Ninth Circuit, but is stayed. So right now, there's a preliminary injunction hearing scheduled for November 1st in federal court, at which time in October both the plaintiffs and defendants will be putting their papers to the court to say whether or not we think the transition plan is going to work or not, and then the judge will hear our arguments on November 1st.
And then a decision would be forthcoming hopefully before the
right.
December 1st deadline.
Exactly, yes.
I see. And how do you see this fight right now playing out in terms of the arguments that you're making and the argument the state is going to make? What grounds is this decision going to be made on?
I think that the ultimate grounds are the state is ultimately on the hook for making sure that people have the services they need that will keep them in the community. So if the state is able to show the judge that they have taken that duty that is theirs and put in place services for all 35,000 people that meet their needs and are going to keep them in their communities and with their families and in the places that they choose to be, then I think the state could be successful. I think our position is, without real planning and real services in place, literally you're getting your service as of December 1st, then the state is not going to be able to, they won't be meeting their
obligation. Won't be ready on day one, basically,
yeah.
Because there will not be a seamless transfer.
Right.
Because it's not like people are going from one program into another.
Right.
What actually, Michelle, will people have to actually do on December 1st?
We've been, the providers will have to set up a discharge plan and discharge the participant, what we call the individuals that come to our programs, and the families will have to make a choice of whether to place, keep their loved one at home.
That's, could they try to pay out of pocket and stay with you?
They could. They could.
And what would it cost them? Would it cost them the same $68 a day, or would it?
No, actually, we've met with all of our families. We serve 120 people a day, and on the majority, most of them have indicated already that they can't pay more than anywhere between $15 and $30 a day, that the Medi-Cal benefit was really helping them to supplement to keep their loved one at home because they're already paying out of pocket for other things, and as you heard earlier, for dental care and things that the Medi-Cal once paid for. So I just think many of them are going to keep their loved one at home. They're going to probably start a fire in the home and start calling their loved one at work, their daughter at work, because the folks that I serve have dementia. And I just think it's a catastrophe that these people can't remain in a system that took us 2 decades to build. In this state, it's good, and if there needs to be some sort of changes to it, that the state should be working with us as providers to keep an infrastructure that does work.
This is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing the defunding of California's adult day health centers with our guests, Assemblymember Mariko Yamada, Michelle Pope, Executive Director of the Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay, and Elizabeth Zerker, Staff Attorney with Disability Rights California. We have some calls coming in. We'll get to you in just a moment. 415-841-4134 if you want to join us. Again, 415-841-4134, and it looks like our email is now working. You can also email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So let's go to our first caller, Carol from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hi, is that me?
Yes.
The reason I'm calling is that I also understand that, at least in San Francisco, some of the long-term care places are actually cutting out their long-term care provisions. In which case they're taking short-term patients because the short-term patients pay more. So if in fact we're going to lose the daycare, and if some of these people are then supposed to go into long-term care, what really does happen to these people? Because it sounds as if we're losing those slots as well. It would appear to me that a lot of people are going to have to quit their jobs to take care of their parents.
Thanks so much, Carol, for your call. Assembly Member Yamada, would you like to respond to that?
Well, I will certainly try to answer that. That is a very real consideration, that with the number of participants or recipients of adult day health care today, we do not have the capacity to place everyone that would be institutionalized. It's not where we would like to see people go. There are some facilities, of course, that provide excellent care, but the issue here is we do not have the capacity today in California to accommodate everyone, whether we want them there or not. To be more specific about where are these individuals going to go in San Francisco, I would certainly want to take a look at that and work with some of my colleagues who represent the San Francisco area. I will be having a hearing on adult day health care elimination on the Tuesday that we return to session. That's Tuesday, August 16th. I was in touch today with Tom Amiano and Fiona Ma, really as a courtesy to let them know that I would be participating in this evening's radio program. But I know that they, too, share this tragedy that's unfolding before us. People will have to make a choice between keeping their jobs and taking care of their loved ones, and that is not a choice that anyone should have to make, especially in a very difficult economy. But I do not have a good answer for you, the caller, as to where these loved ones will go. I think what we will find is that there is no capacity, and this is not something that the state should be engaged in for making these having residents to have to make these kinds of choices about their loved ones' futures.
415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Let's go next to Benny from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hi, my name is Benny. I'm a program director for Golden Gate Day Health. I want to comment about the elimination of Adult Day Health Center, the negative impact to the failed Chinese seniors in San Francisco or maybe the entire California. And, because they are monolingual Chinese, and then they don't speak the language. And according to our statistic along my center, 43% of our Chinese kind living alone. Hmm. And most of them are living in a single occupancy room. So when they come to the center, we provide medication management, physical therapy, and occupational therapy. And most of them, they have dementia or mental disorder. So when they come to the center, we provide medication management. And even though sometimes they don't know the medicine name, our nurse can translate it for them and remind them to take the medicine at home or at the center. So imagine if all the adult health center eliminated, they will confuse about the medication. So you imagine how serious the impact to Chinese immigrants. And second, no available resources in the community can accommodate failed Chinese senior. Let's say for the case management program, the waiting list can be up to 4 months or 5 months. If we close them, we don't know where to refer them to the community agency. And most of our Chinese failed senior, they don't like to be enrolled in honor program. Two things. One thing is, they have been seeing the family doctor for a long time. They don't want to give up their family doctor. And second, if they are enrolled in honor program, they need to give up their in-home supportive services hour. Most of them, the in-home supportive hours, the family member or relatives help them. So it really create disaster to the failed seniors in the community, especially they are they don't speak the language.
Thank you so much, Benny, for your comments. 415-841-4134. We have one line open if you'd like to join our conversation. 415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com. Let's go next to Lance from Alameda. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. As your panelists have pointed out, this elimination of adult day health care is a very bad idea, both financially and for all the caregivers and people involved. At the national level, Assistant Secretary Greeley for the Department of Medicare and Medicaid Services promotes adult day health care as a way of keeping people out of institutions. Some Republican governors, such as John Kasich in Ohio, are introducing adult day health care as a way to cut down on nursing home costs. So my question, if the panelists have any idea, is why is Governor Brown, whom I voted for and thought a fairly sensible person, actually doing this? Is he getting bad advice from the California Department of Health and Community Services, or is there some hidden political agenda?
Thanks very much, Lance, for your call. Assemblymember Yamada, we got to go to you with that one.
Well, as I said in an earlier part of this program, many of us were not at the table when some of these discussions were made. They were, at higher levels or leadership levels in the Assembly and the Senate. But, it would be very difficult for me to speculate, why our good governor, who I also voted for and worked for, to get elected, who is himself a senior at age 73. And I did want to take this opportunity to say I know that I made a statement to that effect in another venue, and there were some criticisms about me saying that it was like taking a jab at the governor for calling him a senior. Well, I'm very proud to be a senior, and I believe he is as well. But I cannot speculate as to why a decision like this that flies in the face of really fiscal responsibility that we're all trying to get to would be made. The program has proven itself to be cost-effective, a much more humane and much more logical alternative to institutional placement, which really should be reserved for those, that absolutely could not be maintained in any other setting. I look forward to hearing some conversation perhaps from the governor in the near future as to, what it was that motivated him to veto, a very Spartan alternative to the existing program, especially at a time when I refer to the silver tsunami. It's at our doorstep. We have 10,000 people a day in the country turning 65. We have the largest population of seniors and seniors in waiting in the country. Right here in California, We also have a whole population of people with autism that are going to become adults with autism that are going to need care and placement. We also have a returning veterans population that will also need day assistance, day supports to remain in the community. So I look forward to having that conversation either if we're lucky directly with the governor at some point or certainly through his health care director, Toby Douglas, in about a week.
And staying with you for a moment, do you think this is another example of it's not budget chicken because the budget is passed, but some sort of brinksmanship here? Will there be a sort of a last-ditch effort to kind of pull this out and restore the funding? How could that happen? Could you envision a situation like that?
Well, you know, one could never rule out, magic legislation, I suppose. But because we have a 4-page transition plan that has now gone into a 22-page implementation or transition plan, I don't see any, legislative vehicle. Budget trailers are about the only legislative mechanism that is available to go into, that takes immediate effect. We cannot change the legislative process to accommodate this crisis, unfortunately. The only way, would have been through the budget because that, trumps all other legislative activity in terms of when it would take effect. And we are facing, originally first a September 1st cutoff, and now December 1st because that is the federal extension. I think really at this juncture, our only hope is from that third branch of government, that's the courts, the judicial branch. We look to now for some relief hopefully, restoration. But, 17 adult day health centers have closed already. There are many that just cannot continue in the face of this wrenching uncertainty. I'm very saddened and I do regret the budget vote that I took. Toyed with that up until the moment that I pushed the button yes to vote for the elimination. It is a vote that I will regret for the remainder of my career.
And how about this transition plan? So Governor Brown's office did outline a transition plan on Friday of last week that basically said that there was going to be some money put out there for coordination of care amongst current recipients of the Medi-Cal benefit of adult day health center care, and that people would be asked to sign up for a Medicaid managed care program through which then they would get this this care management benefit. And I believe if I read the information correctly, that these plans would get $60 per member per month, as opposed to the $68 per member per day. Mm-hmm. So obviously, much reduced in terms of the benefits. But how about this notion that, okay, here comes the governor with a plan to say we are going to give people some care management to help them to navigate the system out there so that they can put together a system that is going to help to make up for this loss of benefit. Thoughts from you, Michelle Pope?
I've read the plan, and there's no beef to it, as they say. There's a lot of undocumented, there's a lot of assumptions made that people can use the current MSSP system that already...
What's that?
Multi-purpose seniors... Service program. Right. And, that will help some people. Our folks are already MSSP participants. IHSS is listed as another in-home supportive services, mm-hmm. Is another level of care that is listed as a possibility. But again, our families are already getting IHSS. Then it speaks about the managed care system, but the people cannot enroll in the managed care system unless It's on their birthday, according to what I read so far in the transition. So it just doesn't have anything for me as a provider that gives me direction, that gives me an understanding of what the next steps would be. All I still see in that is that as of December 1st, my doors are closed.
And Elizabeth, what do you think of the transition plan? I'm not sure that you can comment on it, but do you think the elements of the transition plan would be enough to satisfy the judiciary when faced with this decision? You said the grounds is that the government has to show that they can meet their obligation. And I don't know, what's the ground floor on this?
Well, I think that the ground floor looks like what exists right now for people who are in the program, which is that they have a multidisciplinary assessment by a team of doctor, nurse, PT, OT that puts together the plan of care that they get at their ADHD program. Medi-Cal then approves that plan of care, and Medi-Cal, by approving it, Medi-Cal is also certifying that without ADHD services, that person is at has a high potential for institutionalization, emergency room visits, hospitalizations if they don't get ADHD. So for each person, you need to show how their needs are being met. Now, if you're going to get care coordination, case management through managed care, what that's going to look like is a phone call to a person saying, do you have the medication you need? Do you need to get some PT? Then here's a number to call. I mean, it's an arm's length interaction for many of the services that they're talking about. The MSSP program that Michelle mentioned is another care coordination program. It does not provide direct service. It links people to services. So you still have to have a way for people to be getting the services that they have otherwise been getting at ADHD. In-home supportive services is unskilled care. It has a statutory maximum number of hours. The department has said that medication management can be provided by IHSS. However, that's a in-home supportive services. However, that's a skilled service that is not part of what the IHSS program would offer to people. So until a package is put together that actually works, because we know that the program does do a service, and then it's really just paper, and it doesn't have any meaningful weight, really. And I think that it remains to be seen. You know, the department has said that they've looked at 7,900 people in the program. That's 25% of the program. I mean, there's a lot. There needs to be much more concrete data, meeting with each individual participant, developing a plan of care for them, doing what ADHD programs do now in order to ensure that people have the services they need.
It sounds like reinventing the wheel.
Yes.
And then the wheel's much cheaper. Something that's already happened, right? Mm-hmm. And why do people have to go and recertify themselves for these services in the first place? Mm-hmm. Is there a possibility that people who would have qualified for services under ADHD under this transition plan, I don't know if the details are in the plan, could not qualify for this care management? Does anyone know that?
It's not in the plan really.
And it's not in the plan, but for some of the programs that they've outlined, like the PACE program is 55 and older, MSSP is 65 and older. So there are restrictions within individual alternatives that are existing, yes.
Assemblywoman Yamada, what did you think of the transition plan when you heard about it on Friday?
Well, I have read it as well, and you know, we are studying it very carefully because it is the first statement on the part of the administration as to how they are going to address this rather massive shift in how services will be delivered, if they will be delivered to all of these recipients. You know, I would like to think positively that, you know, the administration frankly exacted what they asked for from the legislature. We are, again, as I say, surprised at the veto, which was the agreement that we believed we had. And so now the healthcare department, healthcare services department, is in an unenviable situation, you know, nothing that they particularly may have asked for. But I have very grave concerns that in the very limited time available to this, you know, entire population of both care receivers and caregivers, that we're going to be able to meet the requirements that have been set forth. I just, you know, I really have great fear that we are going to lose some of our recipients, not only to less appropriate services, but perhaps even worse. And I think that that is the greatest tragedy. You know, we also have a workforce of about 7,000 that, you know, will be facing unemployment.
You mean the Adult Day Health Center,
yes,
folks?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The 300 or so remaining centers without additional income to augment. And I will, in fairness, say that the governor did sign another bill that allows for a fee for service for those who can afford to pay. But, you know, this is not what the Adult Day Health Center and care program was designed to, you know, they're not the primary audience that this program has been serving so well and so cost effectively.
Okay, I'm going to cut you off there. I'm sorry, because we have a couple of callers.
Sure.
I'm going to try to get to.
Absolutely.
Let's go next to Sally. Sally from Alameda. Are you there, Sally?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, briefly, because we have less than 5 minutes left.
Okay, well, I just wanted to say that I was an RN at one of the local Adult Day Health Centers until very recently, and I also work at one of the major hospitals in San Francisco. And we've already been seeing patients admitted to the hospital that we were able to keep out of the hospital before. And for example, you know, we had a patient who we'd been able to keep out of the hospital with COPD for over a year. And before he came into our program, he was in and out of the hospital every 5 weeks.
Mm. I'm going to have to cut you off there. I get your point, stabilizing people and helping them stay in the community. Let's go next to Jan. Welcome to the program, Jan. Brief comment. Jan, are you there? Okay. It looks like we lost Jan. Okay, so in the last minute or two that we have left, obviously lots of groundswell of support for ADHDs tonight on the program. How can people get more involved in this discussion and participate? Let's start with you, Elizabeth.
Well,
Is there a website people can go to follow what's going on?
You can go to disabilityrightscalifornia.org, and we have and look within that website for the case Darling versus Douglas. That's the name of the case. The other website I would suggest people go to is CADS, which is the Membership Association of Providers, and that's CAADS.org.
And we'll put these on our website. And Michelle Pope, are caregivers are organizing? And if so, how can other caregivers get involved?
Getting their voice out by picking up the phone and calling the very people that you voted for and letting them know how much you need this benefit, how much this benefit needs to stay in our community, and letting them know how it helped you to stay employed and how it helped you to remain a caregiver that was able to keep their stress level down because Adult Day Healthcare was there. Get involved. We the people.
And Assemblymember Marika Yamada, you get the last word.
Well, thank you. Well, certainly all of the above. I think contacting your elected representatives to ensure that this issue remains at the forefront, but also turning to some of our non-traditional partners out there, the business community, for example, who will see greater stress upon employees whose family members will no longer have this service. Loss of employment will not only affect the providers of Adult Day Health, but will also affect the family members who will then have to leave their jobs in order to take care of their loved ones.
And less revenue from the state.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, and that's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Assemblymember Mariko Yamada of California's 8th Assembly District, Michelle Pope, Executive Director of Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay, and Elizabeth Zerker, Staff Attorney with Disability Rights California. Thanks all for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For a link to this and other City Visions shows, to let us know what you thought of tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, check out our website at cityvisionsradio.com. Our engineer this evening was Debbie Kennedy. Tonight's show was produced by Susie Britton. Senior Visions' senior producer is Judith Sansone, and Neil Freese manages our website. Join me next Monday when we explore the changing face of public art. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.